The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
It's one thing falling in love with a house, picturing yourself moving in and calling it home, and quite another navigating the world of price negotiating, mortgage lenders, and finding the budget that works best for you. An agent who's a Realtor can make understanding that world easier. Realtors have the expertise, access to proprietary data, and tools to help you get from imagining living somewhere to actually doing it. That's the kind of help we can provide. Because that's who we are. Realtors are members of the National Association of Realtors.
Hey everyone, welcome to A Good Football Show. I am Matt Straup. It is Monday, April 11th, and today with the NFL draft just over 2 weeks away, we're going to be doing a mock draft here on the podcast. We'll be drafting the first round in its entirety. To do that, I'm joined by Kyle Dvorchik and Tyler Fornes, who will be drafting while I attempt to moderate. Guys, before we get started, I want to make one ground rule very clear. Arguably the most important ground rule. We're going to have a 60-second clock per pick, and I'm going to attempt to hold us to it. Now, there are going to be moments where we'll probably go slightly past it while we're analyzing picks, but I want to be clear, as was the case last year, blatant disrespect of the clock will result in the offending party auto-drafting a kicker. So let's just take this seriously.
Can we get auto-drafted the, the San Diego State punter or something? Like
Punt God, Matt Ryan.
Yeah, that's him. No, because it's supposed to be a penalty, Kyle. I feel like you'd be excited about that almost.
I would be reluctantly like, ugh. I'm not saying you should draft a punter in the first round, but if there were one, it'd be this guy.
See, it'd be nice if the Raiders had a first round pick, because then we could make the pick in the spirit of Al Davis, and it would make
very
some
true.
Sense.
He could go to the Bucks. The Bucks drafted Roberto Aguayo, he was incredible in college too, and that didn't work out.
All right, well, so we're gonna alternate picks down the line here. Kyle will be picking first, Tyler will be picking second, and on down the line, guys, we're gonna allow a trade or two if you guys want to do that, but I think the rule we worked with last year is it would have to involve trading up to get a quarterback, just to keep us from too many silly trades throwing this thing totally haywire. Mainly my spreadsheet is what's at stake here, guys, let's be honest, as I attempt to keep track of this.
Yeah, like projecting trades is really hard too. Like, we always think it makes so much sense for this team to trade up and take this player or whatnot, and those things never materialize. And it's the weirdest trades that ultimately come to fruition. So if you're making your own mock drafts for accuracy's sake, you're trying to compete in like the accuracy competitions, projecting trades, I feel like it's like a fruitless
endeavor. Oh yeah. And to be clear, I will not be upset if there are no trades here today. Let's just be very clear about that.
I don't think there will be. I'll talk about some interesting ideas for trades, but I don't think I'd be projecting any, because just you'd be more right not projecting them throughout.
Good deal all around. Kyle, we're going to start with you on the clock. 60 seconds. I don't know that there's a lot of suspense here, but talk us through what you're thinking.
No, I mean, I don't need 60 seconds. It's Aiden Hutchinson. It's not particularly close. There have been some Walker conversation. There was tackle conversation before they franchise tagged Cam Robinson, but he's number one player on nearly every single board. You're not giving up upside by taking him over Walker. So, I mean, I think he's the complete package. He fits what they need too. They had a pretty toothless pass rush. So obvious Aiden Hutchinson. That's probably 30, 45 seconds. Next pick.
Kyle has fixed the Jags, Tyler. The Jaguars franchise is fixed. Done deal. You're about to be on the clock here. Feel free to any thoughts on Aiden Hutchinson you have as well, and just talk us through your thing with the second pick.
I love Aiden Hutchinson, but I will say, with the history of Trent Baalke and how he loves high athletic upside and how he drafted historically with the 49ers, do not rule out Trayvon Walker. That athletic upside and potential could be incredibly appealing to him. I think it's a reach to take Trayvon Walker in the top five and potentially the top 10 because of the lack of production. And it's hard for me to take a guy, as he's been talked about, with a Danielle Hunter-like upside with no production in the top end of a draft, even though, as we talked about, the ceiling's really high. With two, there's really two options for me. It's either Kayvon Thibodeau or Malik Willis. Do you want to take the quarterback you think has all-world upside Or do you want to take a pass rusher that could really solidify that pass rush, which is something that they desperately need, especially to ease off their cornerbacks? Jeff Okuda is coming off a torn Achilles tendon, and they really don't have a lot on the backside of that defense. But the quarterback is the most important position. Malik Willis has all world upside. I know Thor has compared him to Michael Vick, and I believe the same thing. I'm taking Malik Willis here, and I just think he's got too much potential. And he's got a floor of Jalen Hurts because he's got all-world athletic ability and the ability to rush the football. He's got the year to sit behind Jared Goff. They can take it patient. This is not a one-year plan. Take the best player available, and that's Malik Willis.
We're putting you back on the clock, Kyle.
Yep, that's perfectly fine to me. I would think it's got to be between him, arguably Walker. People really like Walker. I'm more along the lines with you, Tyler, that like for me, if I'm picking you top 3, 5, 10, really needs to be elite production, and his is more athletic projection, but also he played on a super stacked defense, so there are certainly caveats to his counting stats that don't show up in the simple box score. At least you have to look at his teammates in the box score. So I still think I take Thibodeau, and I'm going to be taking him at 3. It's between Thibodeau and Ikwuanu. I think both edge and tackle are positions of need, really, for any team, unless you're like the Lions. Ironically, don't actually need tackle. They're super set at tackle, but most teams are like, yeah, ideally, we want 2 top 20 at worst tackles. Not every team can have that. So I think tackle would have been fine here, but getting what I think is not that far off. I think the better shot at being the outside, well, he could maybe go 101, would be Thibodeau to me. I don't think there's really any chance. I do think the bulky style would either be Walker or the obvious pick of Aiden Hutchinson. So I will take what I think is probably the second best player in the draft. Not, including positional scarcity and positional utility, because then you kind of have to go Willis at 2 if you think about that. But I think Thibodeau at 3. I kind of think there's a decent chance he's actually gone by here, because I'm not sure Willis goes 2. So if I'm the Texans, I'm happy to get him here.
Thibodeau to the Texans. Malik Willis went to the Lions at 2. Correct. Aiden Hutchinson first. Tyler, you're on the clock for the Jets at pick number 4.
The Jets are in a really interesting position because they desperately need pass rush. They haven't had a true pass rush presence on the edge since John Abraham left for the Falcons in the mid-2000s. We're talking almost 15 years of futility at the position. So having both Aiden Hutchinson and Kayvon Thibodeau both gone here is really frustrating. I don't think that they're going to be in on the Trayvon Walker market, which to me signals offensive line or potential for Jermaine Johnson. I love Jermaine Johnson's game and think he really projects well, especially in how they like to utilize their defenders. They're true 4-3 ends, and that's what Johnson is. But I'm going to take Ikwuanu. There are questions about Mekhi Becton and his long-term flexibility with the Jets just because he's been so injury-prone. And at the very worst, if you want to keep Becton, you have Ikwuanu on the interior, which he played his freshman year at North Carolina State. And then you can kick him out to outside, whether it be left tackle or right tackle. I do know the Jets love George Fant, but they need to protect Zach Wilson at all costs. And no matter what, they're going to be able to get it done with their best 5.
Kyle, the Giants are going to be picking 5 and 7. You're going to be picking for them both times. Are you upset? Are you upset right now seeing Ikwuanu go off the board?
Yeah, you would. I mean, tackles probably, it feels like almost a lock, unless like 2 tackles go ahead of them, or maybe even 3 would have to go ahead of them for them to not take tackle. So yeah, of course you want Ikwuanu, who I think has kind of solidified himself as the top tackle on most people's boards. You'd want him to be there. But I think Evan Neal, who was originally he was the betting favorite for a few weeks to be the number 1 pick to the Jags, they franchise tag Cam Robinson, and that goes out the window. Kind of makes sense for them too. Hutchinson is like the true number 1 talent, even if, they have okay starting pass rushing like Dwayne Smoot and Josh Allen. You want those elite players. I don't think Neal is quite that tier 1 player, but people thought about drafting him 101. Why not 105? And it makes a ton of sense. John Mara talked about all offseason that he did not do right by Daniel Jones. They simply put him in positions to fail. Giving him a starting tackle would definitely help right the wrong he says he's done for Daniel Jones. So ton of sense, Evan Neal. I think you'd want a Ikwuanu there, but this is a good consolation prize.
So Evan Neal goes 5 to the Giants. Tyler, I like to imagine that the Panthers draft room is just thrown into complete chaos after the Malik Willis pick at number 2. There's papers flying everywhere. People are running around, picking up the phones. What's going on inside that draft room in your mind right now as you have a minute to make this pick at 6?
It's either offensive tackle or Kenny Pickett. I'll be honest, I'm on record. I wouldn't touch Kenny Pickett before the 3rd round because I don't think he has any upside. What you see is what you get with Pickett. You're going to get a stalwart guy who can come in and play really well for an offense that's already built to succeed, which is why I thought the Denver Broncos before the Russell Wilson trade made some sense because they had all the pieces available to him. Well, that's off the board. And the connection with Matt Rhule is just going to be too much for me to really say no. I think they're going to take Kenny Pickett here at this spot, but I wouldn't touch it. The only quarterback I'd take this high is Malik Willis. I can't see you justifying taking a guy with no traditional athletic upside or any dominant trait that this high in the draft. This isn't the 90s or early 2000s where you can get away with it. In today's game, look at all the quarterbacks. You have Patrick Mahomes, you have Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson, Justin Herbert. The only one of those top tier guys that doesn't have like true dominant athletic traits is Joe Burrow. But Joe Burrow also is the ultimate alpha, so he makes up for it. Kenny Pickett isn't that. So I just see this as a waste of a true elite resource. But I think the connection with Rhule and Pickett having committed to Temple while Rhule is the coach there is just going to be too much for them to pass up.
That's so Matt Rhule, too. He loves getting his own players. He loves getting his own players. And the thing is, he's probably only going to be there for another year to be with the players that he loves. So, that definitely seems like, I totally agree, the suboptimal thing to do, but it's not like they haven't done it before.
This is the first team where it's like, this is a really bad idea. I don't want to do this, but this is what I think this team is going to do. That's apparently where we are with the Panthers. All I heard from you, Tyler, was this is bad, but I'm going to do it because I think this is what Matt Rhule wants to do.
Yeah, I don't even think it's bad. It's just not good enough to be a top 10 pick. Like, Kenny Pickett could be fine. He could be a starting caliber quarterback. He has all of like the physical skills to be a starter. It's just we don't see him. I agree. I don't really see him lighting up the league. And that kind of just sets a mediocre Panthers roster back into purgatory for another 3 or 4 years. I think he's going to be better than Sam Darnold, probably. Sam Darnold's not very good. But is he the extent that you want to bet the next 3 years on it? I don't think so. But, you know, that's fine. I think it's something they could very well do.
All right, back to the Giants now. So Aiden Hutchinson, Malik Willis, Kayvon Thibodeau, Ike Ekwonu, Evan Neal, Kenny Pickett, Giants back on the clock. Again, number 7. Where are we going, Kyle?
To me, if the board falls this way, it's probably down to 2 players, Sauce Gardner, who they could totally use a corner, and we're still looking at, I'm surprised it hasn't materialized yet, but James Bradbury being traded leaves a pretty open gap at corner. And even if you don't have a gap at corner, you really should just be continuing to stock yourself at corner. It's like PFF has shown that it is really a weak link system, right? You can't have a soft spot in your secondary. It'll just kill. You can avoid the good players, it turns out. So I think Sauce Gardner makes sense here. I think they're more likely to go Trayvon Walker. I think they see Edge as a bigger need, understandably so. Probably the first or second most important position on the defensive side of the ball. And with how much hype Walker also getting as a potential, was as potential 101, I think he doesn't really fall farther than this. Even if I think I'd probably go Sauce Gardner here, they're like 60-40 to be looking at Edge in this spot. And I think they could really look at Edge as high as their first pick.
All right, so you're taking Trayvon Walker for the Giants. That puts the Atlanta Falcons, a team with needs everywhere, it turns out, Tyler, on the clock at number 8. What do you see the Falcons doing if the board looks like this?
This feels like worst case scenario for the Falcons.
Yeah, could be.
Then again, what isn't worst case scenario for the Falcons?
Being the Falcons is the worst case scenario for the Falcons right
it's
now.
Tough.
It really is. The ideal scenario is Malik Willis comes to Atlanta and becomes the hometown hero. And all of a sudden, hey, you have Michael Vick 2.0. Like, oh, that's tremendous. Arthur Blank understands the value of what Michael Vick brought to the franchise before all the dogfighting stuff came around. So that's something to really keep an eye on draft day. But the way the board looks like right here, I think I have to take Kyle Hamilton, because while there isn't a truly great, I guess you could say, hole to fill, Kyle Hamilton just changes the way you play on the back end of a defense. And with how the league is transitioning to playing a lot more too high to really try and corral all these great receivers, Hamilton just has elite range. I don't care if you're in a 4.5 940. He's able to overcompensate for the slow 40 time because of his elite length, his burst, and his vision. He's the best safety prospect I've ever evaluated, and he's the number 2 player overall on my board. Like, Hamilton's that good.
Yeah, like the only reason we don't see him going like 1, 2, 3, because he is like that unicorn like Kyle Pitts, like they took last year style of like, we don't think it's the most valuable position, but he sort of breaks the mold of what it is. I think specifically because I think teams are probably getting more keen to this, is his contract as he signs as a rookie will be so much closer to the top 5 of his position than something like obviously quarterback, but even like tackle and wide receiver now with the wide receiver market blowing up, is you don't gain that rookie contract advantage, which is why I think he doesn't really have a shot at going like top 2, 3, 4. which like we saw in mock drafts. I think when we were getting early into mock draft season, that was something that was pretty common. He keeps sliding more and more. I think that's probably correct just from a positional value standpoint. And I find myself like every time I do a mock draft trying to change things up, I almost land on this pick every time.
Don't look now. We may have established a borderline area of strength for this Falcons team, the secondary. With this pick, AJ Terrell, Casey Hayward, they signed as well. If you add Kyle Hamilton to that mix, suddenly they may have a decent secondary, if nothing else. But let's move on to the Seahawks. Kyle, you're on the clock at number 9.
This is a greedy, good board for the Seahawks because you could totally see them trying to bolster the secondary with both top. We haven't taken either of the top corners, correct? You could see them doing that, but they didn't re-sign either of their tackles in free agency. And tackle is not like a position you're like, well, do I take cornerback or tackle? It's totally reasonable to say we want a starting tackle when they have none right now. So I'd be taking Charles Cross here. It would be tough to watch both Stingley and Gardner go by, but I do feel that tackle is just a complete egregious need for this team. I really can't see them building for year one. This isn't the idea of you need to protect Drew Lock, but it's that you need to protect the next guy that comes in probably next year. And I think tackle with Charles Cross is how you do that.
Okay, so it's Charles Cross to the Seahawks. And Tyler, that's going to put you on the clock at number 10, again, for the Jets.
I'm very intrigued by the Cross pick to Seattle because Cross is an elite pass protector and he doesn't have a lot of experience run blocking, which is exactly the opposite of what the Seahawks want to do. So it still could very well be the pick because we just don't know how good of a run blocker Cross could be at the next level. At 10, we took Ekwonu Akpanu at 4 for the Jets. So it really comes down to two positions here. I don't think they'll take corner because of how the scheme really helps maximize their corner value, and they signed DJ Reed in free agency. So I think it's wide receiver or edge. And when I take a look at the board and what wide receivers could be available at both 35 and 38, I'm taking edge and going Jermaine Johnson. I think he's better than Trayvon Walker. In that defense, and I talked about it at 4, he's a true 4-3 end. They run that cover 3 scheme that we saw that Seattle made famous, and he's going to be able to play inside and out and really set the edge for that team and be a high productive, high efficiency pass rusher. So you put him next to Quinnen Williams and just have some fun.
All right, that's 10 picks in. So Charles Cross to Seattle, Jermaine Johnson to the Jets at 10. That puts Washington and Kyle on the clock now at number 11.
Yeah, I don't know if I feel like this will be the latest. And I think it's just the way our boards kind of fell bantering back and forth. This is probably the latest you could find Sauce Gardner. If I'm Washington, I'd be ecstatic to get him here. They really only have one like really high end corner, Kendall Fuller. And the whole strategy last year is just don't target him. There, you can throw other spots. Like I said, with other teams, there are other spots on the defense you can target. And we saw they just got absolutely crushed by even competent passing games last year. So with the defense not quite living up to the hype that it should have last year, they had a lot of injuries and also a COVID situation late in the year. But we saw that the defense is just it's the nature of defense. It's just not nearly as sticky as offenses. You want to bolster it and you want to make sure don't target Kendall Fuller is a winning strategy against you. So Sauce Gardner here, and this is like I'd be ecstatic to find him. Even if he's not the biggest need they could possibly have, you'd be ecstatic to get a player of this talent this late into the first round.
Okay, so Sauce Gardner goes to Washington. Tyler on the clock for the Vikings. Your Vikings, Tyler?
My Vikings. This is a kind of worst case scenario for the Vikings. Because Sauce would obviously be a welcome target. I don't think Derek Stingley is worth the selection at 12, and that's what scares me, because the foot injury, the lack of good tape in 2020 and 2021. 2019, he looked like a first overall pick. But can you ever duplicate that player? I genuinely don't know. I don't know how the Vikings will feel about him, but I am going to take him here for the perspective of being trying to predict. They do have his former DB coach at LSU as a current corners coach for the Minnesota Vikings. Plus, Patrick Peterson is there, Justin Jefferson. If there's going to be a team that's going to take a chance at Derek Stingley, I think it's Minnesota, for the sole fact that they're going to have more inside information than any other team in the National Football League because of what's currently in the building at TCO Performance Center. So Derek Stingley Jr., as much as I would be against it, just makes too much sense for the Vikings here.
Yeah, it's like what we saw with Terrace Marshall last year, too, where the team that had the most inside information, Joe Brady coming from LSU, was the first one willing to take a chance on him despite the health concerns. I totally see that connection as well. I'm even less concerned. I know it's been so long since we saw like that true, like you said, he was like number one overall pick caliber, especially in this week draft class. It would have made a ton of sense. from a, like an analytical perspective, that sort of, you think about it like a wide receiver perspective, age adjusted production, that type of age adjusted production, I think is so high in upside, even if it's, admittedly, it's been a while. And his athletic testing in his pro day was really good too, better than I expected. And he looks like a good athlete, but he looked incredible at his pro day. So I think I'd even be like less concerned with this pick than you are.
Sauce Gardner, Derek Stingley Jr. back-to-back at 11 and 12. Who is Houston taking at number 13, Kyle?
This is tough. What I started Houston with Edge, Kayvon Thibodeau, correct?
That is correct.
Making sure I have all my ducks in a row. This is tough. They need a lot of different things. I know they brought Brandon Cooks back on the contract. They are not going to be trading him, nor Laremy Tunsil as well. I still think, you know, we didn't really see much from any of their other wide receivers. I think they have a very reasonable argument to go receiver. And I think they're somewhat reasonably testing out Davis Mills, because I don't think he has a high chance of turning out. I don't think they probably do either, or they would have taken him higher. The NFL kind of decided that he isn't probably a starter, but he played decent down the stretch last year. And with how much rebuilding their roster needs to do, lucking into him turning out to be a starting caliber quarterback, that's like an ideal, although unlikely scenario. You probably do that by propping him up with another receiver, at least trying to give him a good shot at succeeding. So I think Drake London here would be the pick. I think you could argue between really either of the Ohio State receivers, probably Garrett Wilson, but I know, you know, not everyone thinks he's even the best receiver from his own team, which is crazy. I'll go Drake London here, mostly just looking at like draft ADP, thinking that's probably who they would want. But the Texans are also a pretty squirrely franchise. They could go a number of ways.
So the first wide receiver is off the board at number 13, Drake London to Houston. Tyler, now it's the Ravens at number 14, and 1 minute for you to make this pick. You're muted, though. No penalty for the muting.
Well, I appreciate that. No kicker goes to the Baltimore Ravens here. So this board falls really nicely for the Ravens based on kind of what they need. They really need to address both sides of the trenches. They traded Orlando Brown, and then Ronnie Stanley got hurt, and that really limited what they could do in the rushing game. Just some of the myriad of injuries they had was just unfair. Started 8-3, completely missed the playoffs, mainly due to those injuries. Lamar Jackson needs somebody to help protect that offensive line, and I'm going to go Trevor Penning from Northern Iowa. A little bit of a reach here, per se, but I just think he fits everything what the Ravens want to do. He is a straight-up nasty blocker on the interior, and he is a great north-south mover, not the best mover laterally. Okay. He had a PFF run blocking grade of 99.9, which is, I believe, the highest in the college football era.
Seems good.
So this guy can block, and the best part about the Ravens' offense, because of Lamar Jackson, it makes it really easy on the tackles and pass protection, as long as the edge rushers just can't pin up and speed rush on the outside. So Penning would have an easy transition to learn more technique in the pass rush element. So I love the fit here.
Only 99.9, though, on that run blocking grade.
Where's that last 0.1?
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah, yeah.
Disappointing, to be honest. It is what
the
it is.
The Eagles and Saints traded picks here, and this is where your early mock drafts look different from the ones now. So we have Philadelphia. Wait, they're picking 15th and 4. Anyways, there was some swapping in this region, but it's the Eagles at 15 for you, Kyle.
Yeah, I had to write up this blurb for when this pick swap happened, and there's like just so many slight picks moving. It was one where they also like the Eagles traded up again in the first round slightly, just like swapped like, you know, 16 and 18 or whatever. So it was a nightmare to write this one up. I'd be shocked if at some point, maybe it's not this pick, this is where I would do it, but if the Eagles don't go receiver, like it's very clear they need something more than Devonta Smith. I think he'd be perfectly fit as that stretch Z receiver. And then I think to me, Garrett Wilson as the X, he's not like the prototypical, like, you know, 6'3", 215 pounds guy, but he can play anywhere. I believe 2 years ago, we got the bulk of the snaps in the slot, then moved outside and was successful both inside, outside. That's the perfect player to balance out what Devonta Smith has with game-breaking speed. But I don't know. I don't want to say he's not fit to be a team's true number one, but you would love to get him some easier matchups by giving him someone to balance him out. And the Eagles have been no stranger to making wide receiver picks in the past few years, although not many of them turn out. Hopefully it doesn't dissuade them from doing the right thing, though. So Garrett Wilson here.
Garrett Wilson. And so now that puts the Saints on the board, another team that you could argue needs a wide receiver. Tyler, is that the direction you're headed, or where are we going here with this pick?
That is the direction I'm headed, because the top four tackles are off the board, and I really just don't see the value at 16 for a tackle. We can talk about it again at 19. But when you look at the receiver board, their best fit is right here, and that's Chris Olave from Ohio State. I arguably think he's better than Garrett Wilson. Olave is my wide receiver one in this draft class. I absolutely love what he does from a technical standpoint. He's incredibly explosive in and out of breaks. He creates separation better than anybody in this class from the technical side of things. And I relate him a lot to how Justin Jefferson moves with his route running. He's not as good in the open field. Olave needs to work on his play strength. But as far as maximizing his separation and knowing how to work things at the top of the stem, I think there isn't anybody better in this class than Olave. And him with Michael Thomas, just being able to dominate on the short and the intermediate areas of the field for Jameis Winston, who arguably needs a large catch radius. Olave can create that separation, and Michael Thomas has that big body. And with these two picks, we could see the Saints trying to duplicate 2017 and try to make a real playoff run.
Love that pick. How do you feel about that one, Kyle?
Yeah, it's like a very obvious position of need. I'd be interested to see if they would instead favor like one of the true burners, like a Jameson Williams, simply because that fits with like what Jameis wants to do. But like they didn't, you know, Jameis didn't get the super contract, right? He's on a 2-year deal. Yeah. That's not what you do for a quarterback that you think is the 5-10 year starter. So I think they should. I would assume they will be more liberal with taking the best wide receiver available as opposed to trying to match someone up with Winston, who ultimately probably is not their starter, like the Davis Mills thing, right? You want him to pan out. You're not rooting against him if you're a Saints fan, but ultimately you do think the most logical outcome is that in 3 years the current quarterback is not the same quarterback in 2025 or whatever.
All right, we're halfway home, 16 picks down. There's been a run on wide receivers. Drake London, Garrett Wilson, and Chris Olave, three of the last four picks, with Trevor Penning to the Ravens in there at number 14. So we're going to finish this up, do the second half of this first round. First, we're going to take a quick break.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
There are any number of reasons you might consider selling your home. To move closer to family, live within a smaller budget, or just wanting a change of scenery. Whatever your reasons, having to figure out all the various housing market trends in your area may not be what you signed up for. That's where an agent who is a Realtor comes in. Realtors have the expertise to help you find the right price and navigate the process to sell your home in a way that's right for you. That's who we are. Realtors are members of the National Association of Realtors.
The 2022 MLB season is underway, and NBC Sports Edge is giving our listeners a special offer. Get 22% off an annual Edge Plus subscription when you use promo code BASES22. Get expert insight and access to tools that will give you an edge against your competition at one low price. Go to NBCSportsEdge.com/EdgePlus. Use promo code BASES22 at checkout to save big this season. Kyle, back to you. The Chargers on the clock, number 17.
Yeah, I think the Chargers are probably hoping this player makes it here, and I think all Chargers fans are. I'm not sure it's the most prudent pick to take a run-stuffing D-tackle, but Jordan Davis, dude, his athleticism is we should think of him as like a Saquon Barkley-level athlete. Like when you look at, your 99th percentile spark score or whatever, someone like Saquon Barkley, we love fantasy, so we really don't see that from the defensive side as much, but we should think of Jordan Davis like that. I know they signed a few defensive tackles, some linemen, to possibly fill their terrible run defense, but they didn't make any giant signings. They didn't do something that would preclude them from taking easily the best run-stuffing D-tackle in this class, and athletically maybe the best one ever. It's incredible. So I don't think it is the most prudent thing. I would probably personally hedge towards wide receiver. I think Jameis Williams would make sense here, but I think they're more likely if Jordan Davis is on the board to go with him. I mean, I watched them get gashed by Rex Burkhead last year. That just cannot happen. So I think if Jordan Davis is here, they're sprinting up to the clock to take him.
That Jordan Davis 40 is seared into all of our brains. We're just hoping that this guy recovers a fumble at some point and we can see him try to take it to the house. Tyler, back to the Eagles at number 18 with 1 minute on the clock.
The Eagles, the board is sitting really nicely for them. One thing I'll comment out about the Chargers pick, I wouldn't shock me to see them take Jameson Williams to really try to get one more burner down the field and really maximize that Herbert arm. But Jordan Davis, he's a nice fat lead, just a fantastic football player. The Eagles are going to take Trent McDuffie here. Really nice, feisty corner who I think his game is very similar to Jaire Alexander's. Not quite as long as Alexander, but plays a very similar style, incredibly feisty at the catch point. And the best part about McDuffie is if he fails a corner, he could be an elite safety because he has those kind of instincts, that kind of vision on the field. And he is he likes to try and be a thumper when tackling. So McDuffie just feels like a Howie Roseman selection. And you get two players at premium positions for the Eagles to really try and build this roster up.
So during the stretch where the Eagles and the Saints are dominating the board, it's back to the Saints at number 19, Kyle.
Yeah, after losing their left tackle, and I believe it's like James Hunt is his backup right now. A perfectly fine swing tackle, but not the player you want to be a starter. I know we talked about previously, we didn't think tackle was quite on the board for them. It's only been a few picks, but it is a pretty massive hole for them. Part of their incredible run game in recent years has been able to pair two awesome tackles in Ramczyk and Teron Armstead together. You're not going to replace Teron Armstead right away from day one, but I think you at least probably want to try, right? So I think... we only really have, like, looking at, like, grinding the mocks ADP, even just, like, a PFF's ADP. Bernard Raymond from Central Michigan. It just doesn't really look like there would be many other options at tackle at this point, just looking at where mock drafts and ADP are falling.
So it's Raymond from Central Michigan? That's the pick?
Yes.
Okay.
Tyler, do you have any other tackles? I feel like there's probably a tier break here at tackle, at which point we're probably waiting a bit longer. Do you have any other tackles that you think could sneak maybe even into the top 25-ish range?
The only one that I could really think of that could sneak into that range is Daniel Falele from Minnesota, just because he, like Jordan Davis, he's not the same athlete. His relative athletic score was around, like, I think it was like 3.5. But the big thing with Falele is he's 6'9", 387, and he is a boulder that can move relatively well. He can, and I think if you want to move Ramczyk over to the left side, which I don't think is a very prudent move.
I don't think they'll do that.
He could be, yeah. But a team that runs a man gap power scheme, like he would be a perfect Baltimore Raven in round two if they don't go tackle in round one. He's about the only one I could think of that sneak in here other than Raymond. But Raymond's 25. So that's going to be something that these teams have to really decipher. And he's raw. He's only played the position for 2 years after moving from tight end. So he gets a lot of comps to Brian O'Neill for that exact reason. But I don't know how many teams are going to value a 25-year-old first round pick. So that's going to be really interesting to watch.
One thing we it is, not the best combination. You'd rather be old and have it really locked down or young and have room to grow. Maybe don't combine them that way. But one thing we probably do need to mention, what do we think the odds are that this trade with the Eagles to get two 2022 firsts was just a ploy to get the assets needed to move up and take a quarterback? That was basically the speculation as soon as this pick swap was made, that they're trying to find ways to basically build this win now type of assets they can send to someone else, right? I don't think it's awfully likely. They've been a team that has just generally been impatient with their draft picks. They're trading up all the time, selling off their future to get the players they want now. I really just think they think they're two first round impacts away from being a contending team. And outside of the Bucks, they play in the worst 2-4 division, or at least one of the worst 2-4 divisions. Bucks are obviously incredible, but they could really, you know, pick up four free wins and then maybe a fifth or hard win against the Bucks in their own division. So I just kind of think they think they're one extra first round hit away, and they've done really well drafting. We want to say, like, make fun of them for kind of always mortgaging the future because they fall in love with this player. They've kind of been right more often than not in recent drafts. So I understand why they're doing it, even if I still think it's kind of suboptimal.
Kyle, I think you're really underestimating the Falcons now in that secondary, that revamped Atlanta secondary. Sorry, go ahead, Tyler.
I was going to say, I completely agree with Kyle, and I kind of alluded to it when I made the pick at 16. I think they're trying to duplicate 2017. That draft class could go down as the best of all time. Just they got a potential All-Pro in Trey Hendrickson in round 7. They got all pros in round 1 with both Marshawn Lattimore and Ryan Ramczyk. So I'm not surprised if they end up trying to go that route again, just trying to keep getting impact players, three top 50 picks. And like the 4 seed in the NFC made the Super Bowl last year in the Los Angeles Rams. Like they're probably thinking, why not us?
By the way, we've been fantastic about the clock. You guys have really done an excellent job keeping it to the 60 minute timer for the most part. We just blew past that. So let's get to the Steelers pick before we auto-draft a kicker here. The Steelers certainly do not want a kicker. They need a quarterback for the purposes of this exercise. They've stayed at 20. Are they happy, Tyler, with how this board looks? What's going on with Pittsburgh?
So this is an interesting one because they do need quarterback, but I believe the signing of Mitch Trubisky really gives them an opportunity to not have to force it. When you take a look at the board, is there a quarterback that you really value here? I don't believe Desmond Ridder has the upside like a lot of people see. I think his ceiling is Alex Smith, and I don't think that's a first-round capability. The one I do see with that kind of upside, I'm going to select here, and that's Matt Corral from Ole Miss. The one tough part about Matt Corral is he comes from a very RPO-heavy system, and we don't know if that's by design, which I believe it is, because Jeff Lebby has run that throughout every program he's ever been at, or if it's Matt Corral's limitations. He's going to have to learn full field reads and progressions. He's going to have to try and make quicker decisions with the football. He's made smarter decisions after throwing 11 interceptions across two games in 2020, throwing less than 11 interceptions this past
two year. Games.
Yeah. They in those games, like Arkansas threw six, they just decided to play drop eight and be like, all right, figure it out. He couldn't figure it out. He played panic football, and he learned a lot from that experience. Corral has a top three arm in this class, and I think this is the kind of player you want to take a risk on if you don't have to move up for. And the Steelers, they have a history of developing players, and they have good weapons. They're the best in the league at drafting wide receivers, so they don't have to force that here. They can take them in round two and round three and develop them. So I'm taking the swing on Matt Corral.
And worth noting, by the way, Chris Sims loves Matt Corral, a guy who's certainly been right about some quarterback prospects in the past. Kyle, it's you, the Patriots, picking 21st here.
Yeah, Patriots at 21. We talked about this, I think it was before the show. But I would have been very interested in taking wide receiver here. I think Nelson Agholor's got like 1 year left on his deal, and it wasn't even like a lock to play that one. They really still, I know they can run like a lot of two tight ends. They have two highly paid tight ends, and they run a lot of two running back as well. But I feel like that's part of a cop-out because they didn't have great receivers last year. Perfectly fine rotational players, just not an elite one that they were like, we got to get this guy on the field. I don't know if Devontae Parker is that guy, but I think they trade for him to at least fill that role to the extent that they need it filled. So looking past that, they go guard here, but I really think they're most likely to go cornerback. And this is kind of stealing from Tyler. I think you will see this whenever, it might be a few weeks, but whenever we get to the AFC East breakdown, I will actually be going, I hope I pronounced his name right, because again, these are lots of names on spreadsheets for me that I'm just trying to break down as fast as possible. Kyer Elam, is that how you pronounce his name?
Kyer Elam, great pick for them.
I choose them specifically because you pointed out they are like one of the man heaviest teams. And that's something we see just nonstop from year after year. Bill Belichick's top corner just needs to be able to man up with other dudes. And you say that he can do that quite well. So I will take your word for it and take him here. What is it? 21 now?
That was 21. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So just resetting the recent picks. Number 16, Chris Olave to New Orleans. Number 17, Jordan Davis to the Chargers. Trent McDuffie to the Eagles at 18. Bernard Raymond to the Saints at 19. Matt Corral to the Steelers at 20. Kyer Elam at 21 to New England. And Green Bay, a team that we all know needs a wide receiver. Tyler, is that where we're going here?
Yeah, that's a tough one. When I kind of take a look at the rest of the board, they do need offensive line help, but just like the Steelers are the best at drafting wide receivers, the Packers are the best at drafting offensive linemen. I don't know how they do it or what their models are, but they just do a fantastic job of drafting, developing those players. Best left tackle arguably in the league is Bakhtiari, fourth-round pick. So they don't have to force it here. They have two first-round picks. Take the guy with the elite-level upside, and it's not going to be Jameson Williams. It's going to be Treylon Burks. I don't think that Jameson Williams is going to fit their size profile because they do have thresholds there, and they've been very successful at creating those. Burks in a wide zone Shanahan-inspired system is his absolute best fit because of how great he is after the catch. He's not a quick guy. He is a build-up speed guy, but once he gets going, you're not going to catch him. Get him in the open field. Let him win over the middle, and he can be a prototypical X and go up and get contested catches. So I think Treylon Burks, considering Chris Olave, who would be a potential Devontae Adams like replacement and how they utilize him, I think this is the best route that they can go. And they can still get receiver on day two with a guy like Alec Pierce, Sky Moore, who can also give them top end potential.
Kyle, I imagine you love this pick. You're pretty high on Treylon Burks, right? You got to love that match, that fit between Aaron Rodgers and Treylon Burks in theory.
Yeah, I hope so. He just needs to like be nice and get Aaron Rodgers coffee for a few weeks to not get put in the doghouse by him. But like, I think it makes more sense. I love this going Burks over Jameson Williams, because Williams seems like the not only replacement but upgrade over Marquez Valdes-Scantling. But that in most off seasons you would, you know, you lose MVS and you think, oh, that's a pretty important role, we should fill that. You lost a much more important role in Davante Adams, and I think though no player in the draft, no, maybe no combination of players will be able to fill Davante Adams, someone like a Treylon Burks or even the Ohio State receivers would be much better at filling that role than someone like Jameson Williams, who looks like the best possible version to me of the Marquez Valdes-Scantling, right? That rangy field stretcher, an important role. And I think we'll be seeing him come just here, but not the role that is most important for the Packers to fill.
All right, 10 picks to go, and it's Arizona next, Kyle, at number 23.
Yeah, Arizona next. I will be taking Jameson Williams. I think he's much better profiles as the Christian Kirk replacement, as opposed to no one's going to profile as the Davante Adams replacement, but at least winning in a similar part of the field where you want someone for Kyler Murray to use that arm to beat defenses deep and just force them to play farther back, especially when your next two receivers, DeAndre Hopkins and Rondale Moore, are going to be winning much closer to the line of scrimmage. I mean, Rondale Moore like literally at or behind the line of scrimmage, depending on how they use him. And DeAndre Hopkins, that short to intermediate, you need that deep threat. And Jameson Williams is that. And I think they are good enough at receiver. They can afford to wait for him to develop and just come back from the injury. They don't need him to desperately play week one at a high level, which like the Packers do desperately need someone who can pick up 10 targets in week one.
So Tyler, how do you like that fit for Arizona? And where are you going for the Cowboys at number 24?
I like that fit for Arizona. I do want to push back a little bit on the idea that they don't need him week one. They don't need him week one, but this is year four of Kyler Murray's rookie deal. It might not be the most prudent move to take a guy who might be not be available until November, might not be 100% healthy for a year or two when you're trying to maximize that rookie contract. But as Kyle said, the fit's tremendous. The ability to stretch the field with Kyler Murray's bazooka arm would be incredibly fun. And opposite of DeAndre Hopkins, that's a dream. I was about to take Jameson Williams for the Cowboys because of their tradition of taking guys who fall in their laps and taking guys with injury history. Remember, they took Jalen Smith. They've taken Randy Gregory, who had the massive off-field issues. They don't care about that kind of stuff, and they need a field stretcher in the worst way after losing Amari Cooper. But they also need to beef up the interior of that offensive line. Center is the most important interior position, so I'm going to go Tyler Linderbaum for them. Unlike other smaller centers, Linderbaum's got some sand in the pants. He's not a guy that's going to be pushed off his spot very often, and he's a nasty mauler on the interior. And he happens to be a great athlete at the same time. I think that he could have a Quentin Nelson-type impact for an offensive line. He is not the same player, but that attitude, that consistent level of play that he has, I think is reminiscent of Quentin Nelson. It will be a massive impact for the Cowboys.
Tyler Linderbaum to Dallas with Jameson Williams to Arizona before that. So it's Buffalo on the clock. And you, Kyle, number 25 here. Where are we going?
Yeah, I think they have a few options. I think to me, when I look at their team, the way they're building in this arms race AFC, if there were other wide receiver options here, like if just one, basically if almost any of them, but really if any of the top receivers had fallen to them here, I would like them. I think they would probably take that player because I think when we see them at their best, like you're seeing these non-Stephon Diggs, like your Gabriel Davis four touchdown in the playoff type of games, but they probably need a third player to kind of round out this trio. I don't think that player is here right now. So to me, I will take interior defensive lineman Devontae Wyatt for them. They have consistently made building up their defensive line a staple in recent years in the past three or four drafts. So I think they probably stick with that and work on the interior after free agency, crushing it for the exterior of the defensive line or just their edge with Von Miller.
Okay, so Devontae Wyatt to the Bills. Now that's Tennessee on the clock at number 26. Tyler, what do you identify as an area of need here? Are we going best player available? Like what's the plan for the Titans?
The Titans are a really interesting team. They need receiver. They need, arguably need pass rush. You have Harold Landry and Bud Dupree. Dupree has been a very inconsistent player. Jeffrey Simmons, you're looking at him coming close to the end of his contract. But they also need cornerback. And Caleb Farley got tore his ACL. He was out for the year. And I see Andrew Booth Jr. on the board, and I'm just going to run to the podium. I think Booth Jr. is the top three cornerback in this class, and I think he's being undervalued by the market. He's if he had the core muscle injury, he wasn't able to work out. I think he would have ran in the low 4.4s. He's got incredible click and close ability, really good ball skills, thrived in press coverage, and can play off the ball as well. When you just see a good player, just go take him. Him and Farley for the next 5 years, assuming both stay healthy, is a very appealing thing for the Tennessee Titans.
Yeah, I love that pick. I thought about, and probably feel like now I have a little bit of post-purchase regret on not going corner there with the Bills, knowing that Tre'Davious White's coming back from torn ACL. I believe they also lost Levi Wallace starting outside corner. So now I immediately have regret. But it was pretty good that I made it to, what are we, like 25 without feeling awful about a pick right away. But yeah, I do think corner probably, I still think they're very liable to take defensive line. Corner also makes a ton of sense for the Bills, one pick before where we just had Booth go.
Very good, by the way. No regret until this late is a really good mark. And we haven't had any panic picks yet, I would say, which is also pretty clutch. Let's see if we can remedy that in the final six picks here, Kyle.
Great.
Tampa Bay on the clock. What are you doing for the Bucs?
Yeah, Tampa Bay's interior offensive line took a bit of a beating this offseason. Ali Marpet retires. Right. They have someone signed with the Bengals. They trade for Shaq Mason, but they are still one starter away. So Zion Johnson, I think this is probably, they're probably in the perfect spot to take guard. I don't really think we're looking at, we don't have a Quentin Nelson right there. Very rarely those guys, the closest we really have is similarly Linderbaum, who I think when you get I get center isn't left tackle, it isn't wide receiver one. When you can get what like PFF is calling him like a generational center prospect, I think anyone who watches him is kind of in agreement that we really haven't seen a center like him. Getting him as late as outside the top 20, even if it's not a position of need, is really a value. Zion Johnson kind of not quite that high level, but he makes sense as they need a starter. He can play a starting role right away, and they're not at a spot where they're going to be getting a new wide receiver one or a new tackle one if that's what they needed. They can start sort of bending the rules of conventional positional value to conform with, they just need a starting guard. So Zion Johnson.
Mm-hmm. Tyler, what are your thoughts on that one? And you're also on the clock for Green Bay with their second first round pick at number 28.
I love the idea of Zion Johnson there. The really nice part about Johnson, he's been working a lot at center. He spent time in Senior Bowl practices before, during, and after snapping the football. So if Ryan Jensen gets hurt or you end up having to move on from him earlier than you'd like, you have the ability to slide him into center. So that flexibility is really nice to have at the back end of round one. When I look at the Packers, we got Treylon Burks already, and the board itself is kind of slimming down a little bit. So I think a dynamic playmaker, either in the secondary or in pass rush, is something that really needs to be prioritized. And I'm going to take the Minnesota Golden Gopher, Boye Mafe. You need to replace Za'Darius Smith, and Mafe is great standing up. He can play on the interior pass rush, and he can put his hand in the dirt. So that kind of flexibility opposite Rashawn Gary, with Preston Smith likely not being on the team once that Gary extension eventually gets done, it gives them two bookend guys that can, one, be flexible with, put them, have them stand up in the A gaps, have them go wide nine and everything in between. I think that his potential, even though he's a little bit of an older prospect, his floor is just high, and the athleticism is crazy. So Boye Mafe makes a lot of sense for the Packers.
Yes, but is he old and raw, Tyler? Is he old and raw, or old and ready?
He's not 25 and raw. Mafe had one pressure for every six pass rush snaps in college. This past year, that's a pretty good production rate.
All right, Kyle, we're into an interesting situation here. You and Tyler alternating picks, obviously. Kansas City is now on the clock for two in a row in theory here. So we've got pick number 29. You're up, Kyle.
Yeah, I really can't see how they don't take receiver at one of these. I think it's perfectly reasonable for them to take receiver at both. I don't think we see many NFL teams do something, I will say that, wild, even though I think it might be right. It is kind of a strange move for teams to make, and I want to be the one who takes receiver, so I'm glad 29 is their first pick. I'm not 100% sold on this is who they would take. I think it would really be down to three players. I will take Sky Moore here. I think Sky Moore, I know Pat Crane has also talked about this, is like top five, if not, I think he has like top three or four as a wide receiver prospect. He doesn't have like prototypical wide receiver one size, but he plays physically. He almost reminds me of, especially coming out of a small Michigan school, of Antonio Brown, the way Brown's like 5'10 or something, but he plays so physically. You watch him just hand fight, and he looks like a big dude the way he fights off bigger corners. Sky Moore, I think, has some of that in his game. Probably doesn't have quite that incredible deep speed that we kind of saw at the peak of Antonio Brown, but you're getting him at 29. So I think Sky Moore is the best player available here, and I certainly think they're liable to take him. I could also see them taking George Pickens because he reminds me more of their type of just the speedy deep guy. And we saw them do that with Mecole Hardman. They thought they might not have Tyreek Hill. They went with need fit more than best wide receiver available. It burned them then. Hopefully they learn from it and take Sky Moore here.
Would Kansas City dare double up here, Tyler? And do you agree that Sky Moore was the call there at 29?
I think it's a really nice debate at 29 between Sky Moore and NDSU's Christian Watson, because while Sky Moore has that elite release package, and I think that really mitigates the size concerns because of how easy he can handle press coverage and how explosive he is off the line and create that separation early and continue it down the field. But Watson is the ultimate height, weight, speed receiver, a perfect 10 relative athletic score, with the only receiver better than him being Calvin Johnson. But the interesting part about that is you can get a similar player later in the draft on day three in Northern Iowa's Isaiah Weston, who actually went to my high school. So I know of him relatively well. He was the third best receiver for relative athletic score. Another guy from the Missouri Valley, height, weight, speed, hyper production for him, unlike Christian Watson. One guy I thought about here, if Kyle didn't take receiver, was going to be Calvin Austin III from Memphis. It's going to feel like a little bit of a reach, but his athletic profile comp is Tyreek Hill. And the way that he might be utilized could be similar to Hill. Get him the ball underneath in space. He's tremendous after the catch. He's not the biggest guy, only 5'7 and 180 pounds, but he is a dynamo with the ball in his hands. And honestly, that's what the Chiefs need more than anything. They got the field stretcher. They have the possession guy with Kelce. And you get that speed, which Sky Moore also possesses, and that could be really fun. But I don't think they'll go that here. They need help in the secondary in that back seven. I'm going to take Daxon Hill from Michigan. You're not going to replace the Honey Badger, but what you can do is get an elite-level player who can do a lot of different things for you. Daxon Hill can play one-on-one man coverage in the slot. He can play a deep third. He can play in the box. He can do some of the same things that Honey Badger did, while not exactly the same. So you're getting a great player in the back end of your secondary, and Daxon Hill will be an impact player right away.
All right. The Cincinnati Bengals have the second-to-last pick of the first round, number 31. Kyle, your last pick of the day here.
Yeah, I thought maybe they would consider going interior offensive line one more time to really, like, I mean, they've been making splashes all offseason, getting Ted Karras, getting Alex Kappa. Right now they have Jack McCarman slotted in. It seems like he'll probably be playing starting role at left guard. Didn't really look particularly good in a limited fashion last year, but second round pick with solid pedigree. I think they probably try and roll him out there and then go back to ball next year if it doesn't work out. That leaves them probably addressing the defense. They actually have a pretty solid pass rush. I know it's not, again, a premium position, but we're past the point of really worrying too much as long as we're not getting auto-drafted our kickers. I think they go Devin Lloyd here, right? We haven't had Devin Lloyd come off the board yet. It looks like by all accounts, he's clearly going to be the highest big board player at this spot on almost anyone's big board. His grinding the mocks ADP is much higher than we have him right now. I think Tyler and I are just playing the game of like, well, do you really want the a linebacker? Do you want to shut down corner? And we'll typically look at tackle, corner, receiver than we do before linebacker. But at this point, I think it's perfectly fine to go linebacker. And it is easily their weakest position group.
Seems like a potentially really good value there, Tyler. Would you agree with that assessment? And then we're going to put you on the clock for Detroit with pick number 32.
I'm very intrigued by the value, but they also spent a lot of resources just 2 years ago at the linebacker position. So I'm really intrigued if they would actually do this and if they value his ability as a pass rusher more than they do as a true traditional linebacker, because they really got to unleash him later in the season as a pass rusher and Devin Lloyd thrived. So that could be a really intriguing option, especially as they try to keep that opposite end outside of Trey Hendrickson really solidified. For the Detroit Lions, this is a very interesting one. They have another pick coming up at 34 and just two picks. Mm-hmm. They got Malik Willis. They need help on the edge. And because this is a multi-year rebuild strategy, I'm taking David Ojabo. Ojabo himself likely could have been a top 10 pick because of his testing, because of his raw skill set. He's only played the position for about 6 years. He is a Nigerian immigrant by means of Scotland. So he's not exactly your traditional type player because he doesn't have a true football background like most of these kids do. But he's raw, hyper athletic. He knows how to get to the quarterback. And you can take the risk with the torn Achilles by having that extra capital. And if he hits in a couple of years, you could have a top 10 pick at pick 32. So the Lions, along with the Packers and Chiefs, are going to be the teams that are likely to take that risk on Ojabo. And it could be a massive hit for them.
You know, Trent Baalke is just seething in his chair right now if he sees this, because he loves taking injured players. And I actually agree with this one, because it's not like they're like, I feel like Baalke so many times took just like real, like, he reached on the players even if they would have been healthy. And this would not be a reach if Ojabo would be healthy. Like you said, he really had an argument to be a top 10, top 15 pick. Getting him this late for a team that is not 1 year away from being a competing team. They're still, even if Malik Willis hits hard as a rookie, still probably more than a year away, looking at maybe 2024 being a playoff contender. That's when you get Ojabo back at full strength, I assume. So I think it makes a ton of sense for them taking the value here with a player who, yeah, we might not see really much of anything in his first year.
We're at the end of the first round. We'll quickly reset the last 10 picks. Arizona took Jameson Williams. Tyler Linderbaum went to Dallas. Devontae Wyatt went to the Bills. Andrew Booth Jr. to the Titans. Zion Johnson to Tampa Bay. Boye Mafe to Green Bay. Sky Moore to Kansas City, followed by Daxton Hill. And then we had Devin Lloyd and David Ojabo to the Bengals and the Lions, respectively. Guys, before we go, quickly want to get any thoughts from you guys, any surprises, any players you are kind of surprised to still be on the board? We'll go with you, Tyler, then you, Kyle. Any parting thoughts?
I don't really have any massive surprises. I think N'Kobe Dean's going to find his way into the first round. I understand there are the size concerns, but the way he plays the game, I don't think it matters. He's got incredible vision. He knows how to burst and get to the football. I really think that there's a chance that New England could take him because he just screams New England Patriot, a versatile do-it-all linebacker, and somebody's got to replace Hightower at some point. I'm very surprised that all the corners, the top corners are all gone. I thought one of Kyer Elam, Andrew Booth would really potentially slide in the second round, but the value's there. They're great football players. Then Jahan Dotson could potentially sneak in the first round over Sky Moore. That's probably my last prevailing thought. Same with Christian Watson. That six receiver is going to be very interesting to see who comes off first.
Yeah, for me, it's not that I'm not surprised he goes in the first round, but I think we are looking within 5 to 6 picks of Desmond Ridder. I think it makes a ton of sense for Seattle. We talked about that last week, but with both 40 and 41, if they were even concerned that someone could be taking them ahead of them or trying to jump them, they have both those picks right there. They could potentially move one to get up a few more picks, get something else in return as well. I think Ridder probably the next quarterback to go, even if I kind of agree, Tyler, I'm not sure if he has that upside, but in the second round, I think you're fine with that. You take him in sort of that like Davis Mills vein where I don't know if he's the answer, but he's worth a gamble on at the price.
And no running back here. Breece Hall lasts until the second round in this exercise. I think we have a collaboration to promote on the site, right, between you guys. Kyle, you want to tell us about it?
Yeah, Tyler and I teamed up to do something sort of similar to this, but no mock draft involved, going through division by division, every team's top three needs, plus the top picks they have and who they could be spending. Tyler being much more knowledgeable about the prospects than I am, helping me fill out where we are filling in, similar to what we did today, just trying to talk through what teams are actually looking for, how they might be choosing to spend the draft capital they have to fill them. Today, Monday, we had the NFC North team needs and prospects fits comes out. We will have 2 a week up until the draft.
Okay, well, be sure to check that out on NBC Sports Edge. In the meantime, that's going to do it for us today. Don't forget to subscribe to our show on Apple Podcasts, on Spotify, wherever you listen. Take a minute to rate and review us as well. As for the picks in this mock draft, I'll make sure to write them up along with the column on the site embedding the podcast. So you have those picks in one place if you're trying to keep track. We are back with new episodes on Tuesday and Thursday this week. I want to say thanks to everyone for listening and for watching live with us. Kyle, Tyler, thanks to both of you guys. We'll talk to you soon.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Is this house a good price compared to others in the area? Are prices going up or down? If I don't make an offer right this very moment, will I miss my chance? These are just some of the questions a home buyer might ask. And these are the sorts of questions an agent who is a Realtor can help answer. Because Realtors have the expertise, data, and access to specialty training to help you navigate the process of buying a home. They provide support, guidance, and have your back every step of the way. That's what Realtors do, because that's who we are. Realtors are members of the National Association of Realtors.